Hi, everybody. It's Rick Chavez with Battle Ready. Hope everybody's doing good today. Battle Ready is about reinventing yourself, giving you the opportunity to find solutions or meet people that you're not scared to ask for help. Mentorship's a big thing, and asking people to hold you accountable is also really important to help you get ahead. Today we're going to talk to a good friend of mine. It's a gentleman that he teaches our kids. He's an eighth grade teacher at Anthony Middle School. Garrett's been doing it about 19 years. He's also a fellow realtor out here helping families. He's got a pretty interesting story coming from a small town. Hey, Garrett, welcome to the show.
Hey, Ricky, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk to you.
Well, so Garrett, we talked a little bit off camera, and then we were talking a little bit about where you come from. Remind me again, you're from Sealy, Texas, from a small town. Tell me about growing up in a small Sealy, Texas.
Country life. That's about it. Country life. Small town, everybody knows everybody. It's vastly different than kind of where I live now, but I still try to treat my everyday in that same manner that you don't meet a stranger. You're always helping somebody. And growing up in a small town, I think it gave me a lot of value that I didn't realize until probably, man, maybe even a decade ago. It took me a long time to kind of grow up and realize what those things, those values that were there. I had to dig them out, and it took a while to do so, but I think I'm finally there.
Okay. So you are in a small town, and your mom was a single parent.
Yeah, so my mom was a single parent. She had three of us. My sisters were probably a little bit tougher than I was because I was the baby. I got to see what they did wrong, and I never did it. So I never got in trouble. Unless it was at school, that was my outlet. And in a small town, you get in trouble at school, the entire world knows about it. And so, that was kind of my, that was my bugaboo growing up, was how I navigated through such a integral part of my youth. And that was just K through 12.
Okay, so got a lot of trouble in school, and not sure where you were going to go. I know you told me at one time that your I think it was your grandfather was trying to talk you going to the military.
Yeah. And so I was even on the whenever you're in high school, recruiters, Ricky, recruiters come and they pick out certain students. They're like, hey, this kid needs the military. And I think those Army recruiters, I think they finally realized, they're like, this kid's too immature. And I didn't realize it then, because I was the cool kid. And I was the one that was partying, I was the one that was doing this and that. And then my grandpa was, he was an Air Force major, and he spent a career doing it. And he would always try to tell me, either you're going to the military or you're going to the oil field. He said, basically, there's not a whole lot out there for you. So I really didn't have a good guiding light. And I never reached out for one either, because I didn't know. And you don't know what you don't know. Some wise
That's my
man said
favorite
something
saying.
like that sometimes. So, yeah.
So how or what, tell me about the situation where you finally decided, man, I'm tired of being here. I got to figure something out. And then I think you applied to Prairie View A&M, right?
Yeah, so I was working for my dad. I thought this was a major career move. I was scheduling his shop for him in the flange business. If you don't know what that is, don't bore yourself looking it up. And that the shop closed down, and I was sitting there going, what really do I do? Prairie View was the town over, and I said, you know what, let me give this a shot. Let me try. I don't know how to learn, but I can probably at least attempt to fake it to see what avenue I could possibly take. I applied. I got into the architecture program, and I spent 4 semesters at Prairie View on the dean's list with a 4.0. And
Okay, so
go
go ahead.
ahead.
I'm sorry.
No, I mean, the only I taught myself how to learn, and that's now what I teach my students. And so it's kind of a big full circle thing. But yeah, that experience, it really launched me to that next step.
So what I was going to ask you, and you kind of answered it already, how do you go from the clown in school to a student at Prairie View A&M and to the dean's list? What happened? I mean, how or why? I mean, did you all of a sudden start applying yourself?
I think, and you hate this answer from me, but I honestly, I don't know. But the best thing that I can figure was that life began to happen, and life began to happen very quickly. And I was sitting there, and it was just passing by. And something in my mind, I don't know if it was kind of getting away from Sealy and some of the people that had been around in the past, and it kind of made me see a worldlier view that I can go make $10 an hour, or I could possibly do something bigger and better. And I think that was kind of a shift in my thought process to go, I can do this because I have the ability. I just never found it. It wasn't in there. And this was now self-motivation. This was all intrinsic. There was nobody else around. There was nobody else going, hey, yeah, go apply yourself. Because I'm telling you, I truly didn't even know how to learn. But nobody taught me. I was a give up person in high school. So it was a let life stop flying by and just grab it.
Okay, so you did 4 semesters there, and then you decided that I want to branch out. And I know I hate talking about this because you and UT, I don't even know about that. But talk about your transition to the University of Texas.
All right, so I'll bore you with the details, but my entire life has been Texas. From 6 months old, going to my very first game, and I bleed orange. I figured out the system without anybody telling me that I had a 4.0 at a major university. And I went out on a whim and I said, well, let me go ahead and apply to Texas. They were starting a biomedical engineering program. And let me go ahead and apply with my 4.0. I'll go in as a sophomore and at the end of my sophomore year, and let's see what happens. I got accepted and I cried like a baby for probably hours on hours. And I was all of a sudden an engineering student at one of the greatest engineering universities, heck, in the world. And so I felt like I reached a pinnacle at that point of I can do this. Again, nobody else around me, but now I'm intrinsically driven to do this next step and move to Austin.
So you moved to Austin, but you didn't have a lot of money, right?
No, not at
And
all.
you were on grants or what was it?
I was on personal student loans, which
Okay.
I'm going to tell anybody out there, you better get a job when you're in college. Personal student loans will kill you later on, but that's a different story. So.
Okay, so did you have a job at when you was at UT?
I tried for a semester. I had a little job at a boutique and I was packing up things for the lady who ran the boutique. But I was pushing myself at about 18 hours a semester because I knew how expensive it was getting. And I had no financial sense because I'd never had an example of how to be financially smart. But I knew that that was mounting and mounting and I was going to run out of money. So I started packing in hours as quick as I could to be able to graduate. And so it was overwhelming, I guess, the amount of workload compared to working as well.
Okay, so did you go straight through or what did you do in the summers?
Straight through. I
Straight
went
through.
first summer, second summer, fall, spring. Yeah.
And just kept going.
Kept going. It was nonstop. I was reading 5 books a week. I was writing 10 papers, 5-page papers a week. It was nonstop. Boom, boom, boom.
What about a personal life or what else did you do there? Just really put your head down and go?
Yeah, I literally did nothing. I was all my friends were back at home. I wasn't I was a little bit older. I was 4 or 5 years older than my classmates. And so there really wasn't a connection. I walked on campus, and this is the biggest regret. This is a huge regret I have. I walked onto my beloved campus. I went to class, I walked off campus, I went home. And that's all I did. I wasn't involved in anything other than I sat and watched a protest happen once, and that was it. And I made the yearbook for sitting there. But that was the only thing I ever, only thing I ever involved myself in, and it's a huge regret because I missed out on so many opportunities because I was letting life just fly by me.
So 3 years later, 2 years later, you have a bachelor's degree.
Yeah, but it's not in biomedical engineering. It's a degree in history and education.
Okay,
Because
so tell me how that
so that transition was a little bit weird. I was walking along the South
transitioned.
Mall on campus, got my backpack on, and I'm just trucking it to the car to head back home. And a voice just popped inside my head and said, "You need to be a teacher." I literally stopped in my tracks like a cartoon moment. And I said, "Man, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard anybody say." That thought stuck in my mind throughout the rest of the day. And I got home. I called my mom. I said, "Mom," actually, I said, "Hey, mama, what do you think about me being a teacher and changing all this up?" And she said, she goes, "You'd be a wonderful teacher." And I said, "Don't you think that the 12 years that we experienced together of me in school was enough?" And she goes, "That's why you're going to be amazing at it." And long story short, here I am 19 years later, molding today's tomorrow.
Okay. And I did have, and I'm gonna bring this up real quick because we're getting close to the our commercial, but I remember getting a message on our real estate team website from one of your students talking about you're his favorite teacher and you're so good to him, you're the best thing ever happened to him. And I was like, I was messing around with the backside. Are you sure you sent it to the right guy? Well, guys, we're getting ready to go into a commercial break. We have Garrett here, teacher to Anthony, and also a realtor. We'll talk to you right back. Hey, guys, if you like what you're watching, know that you can find Battle Ready on Now Media or any of the iHeartRadios and Spotify and things like that. We love having you here. Let us know what you think. We appreciate you. All right, we have Garrett Hartman, who's currently a teacher at Anthony. We just in the last segment, we're talking about how he moved from a small town in Texas to Prairie View A&M, and then he decided to go to University of Texas. And now he's getting ready to graduate at that time, and you decide you're going to be a teacher, right?
I decide.
All
Yeah,
right,
that.
so how'd that go?
So that decision I fought with for a while. In fact, I kind of put it in the back of my mind, and I went to Austin Police Academy, and then teaching was out of my even mindset at that point. And then I had another whim. I took the LSATs. I scored in the 84th percentile, and I was applying to law school, and I was working for a law firm in downtown Austin. But still, in the back of my mind, I'm supposed to be a teacher. And I don't believe in the, well, maybe I do believe in it because I'm living it. You're in position for a reason once you realize it. And I realized it, and I had to go and get my alternative certification. Ended up moving back home. My second home was Hempstead, where my dad was from. And I applied for a job at Hempstead Middle School. And lo and behold, my seventh grade math teacher was the principal. And so I sat down in front of her with my little book that we created and how my room was going to be organized. And she simply looked at me and she goes, "Garrett, what have you been doing since I last saw you?" And basically I told this story, and she looks at me and she goes, "I know," and she's from Sealy, so she knows my family. She knows me forever. She goes, "I know you're going to be amazing at this. Let's go ahead and get it done." I'm like, "What? That's the interview?" And so, and that was it. And then I was kind of tossed in. And at first, I treaded water. I was in Hempstead Middle School, super small school, not the all the supports in the world. And it was kind of like, okay, now what? And I was teaching eighth grade history, and that's where this all began.
So I, in our conversation, I'm hearing a couple purple squirrels, right? Purple squirrels, watch out. So you police
Everywhere.
academy,
Everywhere.
LSAT. But at least you got it. You had some other chances and other opportunities out there. Now you're in a classroom where you raised havoc, right? As growing up, and now you are setting the example for the teachers, I mean, for the students. So, tell me what that's all about.
Okay, so one of the things that I do, and I do this in real estate too, I'm very transparent. So the first day, and when I taught college, I taught 8 years at Lone Star, and I told my incoming freshmen, I did an entire hour and a half lecture on where I came from and how I got to where I am, because I want to make sure that everybody knows I can connect with anything that you've done, 99% chance I've done it too. And so right off the bat with eighth graders, they're not too young to hear that the person that's standing in front of them was a screw up for a really, really long time. So I'm very open and honest about that. And immediately that creates a relationship and a bond that you're going to screw up, but I'm still going to love you, but I'm going to give you a really, really hard time about it. And I'm going to push you along, but I'm going to remind you of what you did and how we can grow from it. So that was my immediate, just natural go-to when I got into the classroom. And those relationships I forged that very first year, of course, they're all grown-ups and adults, but I still talk to a lot of those folks today, and they're still very thankful for, I want to say, being an amazing teacher, but
Well, I know this, right? I tell that I tell the story and the last thing about that student. But so you're in school teaching, and then you decided to get some continued education. How did you balance that and teach? And were you married at the time?
Yeah, I was. And so I balanced that. I actually did it with my best friend. I convinced him to, let's get our masters together. We can work through this together. And let's, because we saw a lot of wrongs in how school was run. Not necessarily wrongs, but they could have been done better. They could have been done with the students and teachers in mind to empower the whole system. And we were seeing a lot of faults, and we said, hey, let's get that next level education. Let's get our principal certifications. And if that step, if that step is supposed to be, we're prepared for when it's presented to us. And so I went ahead and went through with my best friend. We got our master's. I had a 4.0. He had like a 3.9. I'm not saying anything, but and so we got our master's, and then we just continued. We continued on with the world of teaching, and we waited for that opportunity, if that opportunity were to arise, that we'd be ready to take it on.
But how hard was it to balance the school and teaching? And I mean, come on.
So this is weird. Once I taught myself how to learn, and I could do a web series on this. I'm not going to do anything else. I'm focused on what I'm focused on. But I could do a web series on how to learn. And once your brain understands it, it's so easy. And so as I was studying, I absorbed information like I've never even imagined. And it became almost like a drug to me. And that's actually what happened at Prairie View. When I figured out how to learn, boy, I was flying. And it just made it so easy. So when I was studying and I was taking all these tests and I was taking certification tests and all of this, it came very, very natural because I was prepared for what was coming. If I wasn't prepared for what was coming, I would have failed miserably. And so I knew and I prepared and set for it, going through that 18 months to earn my master's degree.
Okay, so now you got your master's degree. Were you still in Hempstead, or had you transferred to Cypher already?
So I spent another 1 more year in Hempstead. And then I realized, I'm like, there's limited opportunity here, and I really want to make a bigger impact. And so I moved to Cypher as a teacher, and I began looking for those next opportunities, but they felt very disingenuine. I went on to multiple interviews. I was a substitute in the AP's office often, but it felt so disingenuous. It didn't feel like I was ready for that step. And so I kind of took a step back. Anthony Middle School opened. I was I think the first hire there, actually, outside the principal. And then I kind of just settled back into this the teaching role, and just, I don't want to say let things happen, but I think I just let things happen around me, and I just step by step, day by day, as opposed to going out and grabbing.
So talk to me about some of the interactions as you're going from a small town school to a Cy Fair school, which the student population is quite a bit. I'm sure you saw people, all students from different walks of life also. But what's some of the challenges that you see the young kids going through and their parents?
So one of the biggest things in small town, and that's what I grew up, and that's what I first started teaching in, you have students who've never been out of the town city limits or the town limits. And then whenever you get to Cy Fair, and I was at Smith Middle School, and you have people, students that are being picked up in Bentleys and Lamborghinis. and they're going to miss 2 weeks because they're going to Greece. And so this was a big culture shock. In fact, the entire population of Smith Middle School was bigger than Hempstead ISD combined. And so I was a fish, a tiny little fish in a very big pond going, wow. I mean, it was very, very eye-opening. But one thing I did notice, and I held on to very tightly, was they're just kids and they're going through the exact same thing that those kids went through. It's just a different level. And so understanding that just allowed me to adapt and to be able to connect myself to the situation that I've experienced. I'm not pulling up in a Lambo, but I can still tie myself to each one of these kids. And so it was an adjustment, but it was an adjustment.
So how did the kids react to you?
Well, I mean, in fairness, they just thought I was awe-inspiring and amazing, and I saw that. I conducted myself right off the bat as if I belonged, in which inside I didn't belong. And a lot of situations in life, people in general, if they feel like they don't belong but can't put on a persona, they go ahead and they just sit back in their shell and they don't do anything. But those that have the ability to kind of put on that, it's not a fake it till you make it because it's in there, but who's going to get it out of you? And at that time, there was a teacher who taught science, and him and I buddied up pretty quick. And he was, man, he's out there, very boisterous, very just happy all the
Like you
time.
now?
Huh?
Like you now?
Yeah, it was in there. It was in there in Hempstead. But whenever I go into this big world, I was like, okay, now what? And then John Heefner, man, we partnered up, and man, we blew it up together. And he brought me out and goes, this is just school. It's huge, but it's just school. And so it was that let me partner. I wanted to partner with somebody, and I did that, and it really helped that transition. And the students saw it. So.
How did you choose the partner? I mean, you're in a big school, you're a country guy, and you find somebody that you want to partner with. How did that
So
actually go?
I saw a professional me in him. And so it was more like this guy has it going on. This guy is what I have here, but I'm kind of in a little world that I'm unsure of right now. And so I just kind of I buddied up to him. I'd talk, we'd high five. We just kind of that natural, hey, help me out. What do I do here? And I would ask probably silly questions, but he was like, oh, yeah, come on, man, let's go check this out. Let's go do this. And I forced myself to learn as opposed to going to, I don't know, the principal and saying, what do I do? It was more aligning with somebody who I knew I could partner with, even though I didn't know I could partner with. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so you're not afraid to just branch out and meet people to see who matches with you.
Well, no, I'm horribly afraid of that. I like my little world. I like my little circle. But whenever it's time to basically just go, you got to, or else the world's going to leave you behind. I force myself
Okay, yeah,
to.
no. No, sure. So getting ready to go into commercial real fast. We'll be right back with Garrett from Anthony Middle School. If you like what you're watching on Battle Ready, know that you can find it on Now Media Television or any of the podcasts, iHeartRadio, and even Apple TV. Come by and let us know. Share with us what you think about the show. I mean, everywhere now. It's pretty amazing where we've come to. And in this show, in this segment right now, we're with Garrett Hartman. Garrett has an MED and he's a teacher at Anthony Middle School, but he's also an entrepreneur at heart. I remember meeting him. We'll talk about that in a few. But Garrett, welcome back. All
Thank you, sir.
right, so now you're in Cypher School District. You're teaching kids. When did you decide to branch out and go teach at the college level?
I needed money, and I kept that In fairness, I left college with $84,000 in debt, and I was running out of ways to pay it, and so I was crushed by debt. Family wise, I was crushed by debt, and I felt like I needed to be the one that fixes it. I applied to Lone Star College. I got it. I was putting some classes. I was making a couple thousand extra dollars, whatever it is. But I still had that. It was like a wave of what now? I'm like, I'm here, but what now? And I had no clue as to what I was doing in life again. And I've been there before. Growing up, all my friends had two-parent households, and I'm sitting there going, faking it, going, oh, everything is great, everything is fine, when in fact it's not. And I probably internalize that stuff too much, and I don't talk about it enough because it was never encouraged. But going to the collegiate level, I felt like, man, I'm pretty freaking cool. I'm a professor, and who would ever thought that I would have been at this point? But why am I doing it? And it took me a few semesters to realize the why is not about the money or the extra income. It was about more of a outreach to where I could talk to young adults on a different level than I could talk to eighth graders, and be able to talk about struggles on a different level, adult problems on a different level. And I used it not as a venting session, but almost like it was while I was teaching them, it became my outlet as to, I don't have a mentor in life, but it became kind of like that mentoring session that I never knew I actually needed.
Okay, so it's usually kind of as a platform. Is that right? Did I get that right? And so you're teaching, and now you're during the day you're a junior high teacher, and then you taught night classes, right?
Yeah, I taught night
How
class.
did that affect your family life?
It was not good. It was a sacrifice that I didn't know I was making, but then I ended up making it. And ultimately, it was the downfall of my personal life at the time, to where it ended up in divorce, and basically, I ended up homeless. I was a professional with multiple degrees, and I was sleeping on a friend's couch because I couldn't afford to do anything. I had no money, and I'm a grown man, and I'm homeless. And so that's kind of where all of this overload of stuff ultimately got me.
So, how did you get out of that? What did you do? Did you meet somebody? What happened?
Okay, so I was still doing Lone Star. I was still teaching there. Luckily, my parents, my mom and my stepdad, loved me to death, and they said, hey, we got a place for you until you get it figured out. So I spent about 4 months sleeping on a friend's couch, bouncing around, and then I ended up staying with my parents for a while, and I met this wonderful human being who has put up with me for many years now, who would become my wife. And she never saw the fault in me whatsoever, but I knew that I felt like I was still a huge disappointment because of the debt I still had was crushing. I had no place to stay. I was back to being kind of that high school loser that had a job. And so I struggled mightily with how do I package this to this amazing person that I'm asking to love me? And so it was a very, very dark time. For God, 2 or 3 years that I had no direction. Again, it's another one. It's the ebbs and flows of life.
So, and I know your wife. She's pretty amazing. So
She's
I'm sure
awesome.
she supported you. Thank God, right?
Yeah,
So,
without her, yeah, who knows?
yeah. So it's always good to have a partner and somebody that you can trust and count on. So that's very amazing. So then you had a baby, and
Well,
then
first, I'm going to tell you, first, I got an apartment. You want to know how I got an apartment?
tell me.
My wife, my fiance at the time, worked her tail off to pay for it because I couldn't, because I was trying to borrow my way out of debt. And all I did was just cycle myself further and further. And because of her, I was able to be not homeless, get out of my parents' house, and actually start to attempt to figure everything out. Then we got married. Then we started looking for a house. I'm trying to figure out how we're going to pay for it, but I'm hiding it. I'm holding this in, and I should have never done this. And so now, yeah, now we're on the house hunt and met up with a realtor who was more of a used car salesman type of guy. And yeah, that's kind of where we were at.
So, trying to find a house, living in an apartment, trying to pay student debt, because I know now, right now, I mean, the colleges are just so expensive, right? So there's hope for these guys, these students that are graduating. I just had another friend that just finished his residency after five or 6 years, and now he's starting to pay back his all the money, and he's like, oh my gosh, it's just amazing that struggle. So you're looking for a house, you met a realtor, you guys were looking, and so what changed? What happened?
All right, so we were actually at my in-laws' house in Fairfield, and we saw a we didn't even know what our price point was. We didn't know what we could afford. We knew nothing, and we had this realtor. Whatever. We saw an open house sign across the street, and we love looking at houses. I studied architecture and engineering and the mechanical systems. I love it. I said, Val, let's go look. Let's go check out this house. We walked into this house and we met a guy who was in there leaning up against the counter, just all casual. And we started talking. We had a conversation, and he talked a lot. It was just nonstop. We had a conversation with this guy, and we said, look, this is probably out of our price point. I don't even remember what we said, but we said, thank you so much. He gave us his card. And I guess a few weeks later, maybe a few days later, we reached out to him, and we changed realtors at that time.
So, I know it's me. So you're talking a little bit trash, but that's okay. But one thing I remember when I talked to you guys, because you guys told me you did have a realtor, I remember asking you guys, what was a comfortable monthly payment? This I asked you a bunch of questions, and you guys didn't have the answers.
No,
I
no
remember
idea.
that.
We had no idea.
And,
I only knew that I did not make enough money to pay for my debt every month. And so this was an out-of-pocket thing. I'm putting on a show and a persona going, yeah, let's look at houses. And inside I'm dying because I'm crushed by debt. And I knew no way out. So yeah. So then we sign up with you. We find a house. You and your partners, your lenders found a way to make it work for us and make it make sense for us. And then we told you when we moved in that we were in fact expecting our wonderful first baby boy. So
well, it's been a long time. So
yeah.
it's kind of weird because I know our relationship has been pretty amazing. And I feel very blessed that you call me from time to time on things. But I definitely remember talking with you and Valerie in that first open house, and then I remember, I think it was Valerie that called me back, said, hey, do you have enough time? Do you have time, or do you have room for to handle another family? And when we talked later on, it was all about just education, because that's what you do. You like to educate people, right? And then I think that what you told me was like, you weren't used to somebody trying to educate you.
Yeah, and so one, and I'm gonna tell you why Valerie called you. And this was something that was very difficult for me. I had zero confidence in myself, even at that time, to call somebody I did not know and be able to say, how can you help us? And so I put it on my wife and I said, hey, call that guy, call Ricky and ask him. Because I truly, it's like calling a doctor and making a doctor's appointment. I struggle with that confidence a lot. So, and there it was. It shined itself out right there.
Yeah, and so I remember us looking for houses, and I think once we determined what your comfortable monthly payment, we stayed within that, because I mean, you and I both now because you do real estate now, and it's like anybody can eventually afford to buy their home. They just need to know what their budget is, because if they're renting, they're automatically just giving money away, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so now fast forward it, you're teaching, and you're teaching at college, you have a house now. You saw that process. tell me what's going on then.
I am now so far into debt that I could not imagine the numbers. I was close to probably $120,000 in debt at that point without the house. And I was making a teacher's salary, making a couple extra bucks on the side. So I was beating myself up daily. I was trying my dead level best to hide it. Worst thing ever. It was the absolute worst thing ever. But at that point, I was happy. My beautiful wife, baby boy, everything's great. And now I was completely crushed from the inside.
So how do you, what do you do at that point? I mean, how do you handle that?
I chose to get out of my comfort zone and make a phone call.
All right, we're gonna talk about that phone call when we come back. You know, thank you guys for being here at Battle Ready. We've got a commercial we're gonna go to, and we'll see you in a minute. Welcome back. We're at Battle Ready out here in Cypress, Texas. Let me talk a little bit about what we're getting ready to go into, talk to in the last segment, because if you like seeing what you're seeing on Battle Ready, come see us on Now Media Television, or you can also come to any of our Roku TV, iHeart TV. You look here on the site, Amazon Music. It's amazing that we got syndicated, because some of the guests that I've had just have been totally, well, actually all the guests have been just amazing people that have helped out. Right now we're here with Garrett Hartman, who is a local teacher at Inside Fair. And Garrett, how does somebody get a hold of you? Let's start it off with that. If somebody wants to talk to you either about education or about real estate.
I mean, easiest way, I always say in my videos, call me 979-200-0100. Email is garrett.hartman@garygreen.com, or you can always check out my website, hartmanlivingtexas.com.
And I know that we'll have your website up here. There it goes. You see it right now? So there you are, showing Texas, right?
That's it.
And all the things, you have a lot of fun on this website.
I do. I try my best. I want to make it a little bit, a little engaging.
Okay. So when we left, we had just met me actually, and it's funny, in that open house, you had somebody else, but you made your wife reach out to me.
I did. I made a reach out to you because I didn't have it in me to open myself up and be vulnerable to another person. Maybe not another person, but to ask somebody for something. And so I made Valerie reach out. We went ahead, bought the house, closed the house. We created a relationship. At that point, I knew Ricky's family. And that's, I think we talked, Valerie and I talked about it. You and her have a wonderful connection together. And, time passed and I still continued to not see a way out for my family. And I had to dig deep and I had to sit there and go, Valerie, I need to try something else. I need to add something else. I said, I think I want to reach out to Ricky and ask him if he'll be my life coach. And I think that was the exact same, that was the thing I asked you. I said, do you mind if you're kind of like my life coach? But I had to open myself up because I'm a man. I'm a man's man. And I had to open myself up as a grown man to another grown man and say, help me. And I did it, and it was the hardest thing. I met you at an open house in Copperfield. I walked into that open house, and I thought I was one of my eighth graders walking into my room for the first time. And we've already known each other. We didn't, not on the level that we do now, but I walked in there kind of like, hey, help me. And you just walked me through it, and you made it so natural, and you made it so, you put the onus on me to be able to say, well, what can you do? What are you willing to do? And you kind of broke me out of my shell to allow that vulnerability to make me want to grow more. Because I think everything else I did, I kind of did it on my own, but I wasn't growing. I was spinning plates a lot. Things were going on, but I wasn't really getting to another level, especially whenever it came to my family. I felt like I was failing them. I felt like I was failing them literally every day, or when the next bill came in, or whenever, I wasn't going on a vacation, whatever it may be. We had that conversation. You were wrapping labels around water bottles. Nobody was showing up. It was kind of dead. And I got to talk to you for 2 straight hours. And from that moment, I had direction. because I reached out to a mentor that I never had the courage to do before. It's so important to just open yourself up and say, help me, and have the conversation. That's what you provided.
So I know one thing, I remember our meeting, and mentorship is a two-way street. You have to be the mentor and the mentee, but to be a mentee, you have to be in receiving mode. You have to be open. You have to be ready to have the conversation and listen to the hard and the good.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that's the one thing I remember in our initial conversation is like, hey, I just asked you, what do you want to be when you grow up? What is it? What's the real goals, right? And I don't think I remember you said nobody ever asked you that, and so you really didn't have an answer. And I think you, I told you, well, let's talk, not make it up. Let's talk, think about it a little while. Let's talk again later. But in order to be available, you have to really be open to the good, bad, and the ugly.
So people don't like criticism. Okay. I took criticism with a grain of salt in the past. And whenever I first talked to you, and you did this to me last night on the phone. So let's be real. Nothing's changed from day one. But if I'm unwilling to accept, or if anybody's unwilling to accept that what will make you grow, then you're stuck. You're not ready yet. You're not at that place yet. I don't know if life hasn't hit you hard enough yet, or you haven't opened yourself up for it. But when a mentor has a conversation with you and they're not just buttering you up, they're like, oh no, you're doing great. Oh yeah, keep it up. Oh yeah. But they're asking tough questions. That's the person that everybody that's out there listening, that's the person that you need. That's how I treat my students. That's how, Ricky, you treat me. And it's be the person that you need somebody else to be for you. And that's asking them tough questions and open. Here I am, open book. I'm vulnerable and I'm willing to say, I don't know. Because how many times do I tell you, I don't know, Ricky? More times than I say, I do know. And you've challenged me in that area.
I think the good thing again is you don't take them as personal attacks. It's never a personal attack, and criticism, I'm going to call it feedback. I'm going to say that because I'm no place to criticize anybody. I've made my share of mistakes, and I still make them here and there. But it's just the thought-provoking questions. Those are the things, and when you get that question, it's not that I'm questioning your capability or anything. It's more like, hey, did you think about this? Did you check this out? You know what I mean? And that's always important. I know when your students come to you, because I'm sure when you're in class or when you're between classes, and you have those students out there that may be having those family challenges or even challenges with other students, when they come up to you. How do you handle those?
I rely on my personal history, and it's usually a one of the biggest things I tell students. You can't blame yourself for adult decisions, just plain and simple. And I teach at a very vulnerable age group, 13, 14 years old, and I look at them and I tell you, and I can say honestly, I've been there, and it's this will not last forever. And with those few words, and just as honest and open as I am to my students, they ring true. And to where they'll give you a little bit of a grin. They may still be upset. Something still may be bothering them. But one of the things is, if you let outside forces control who you are, emotionally, physically, mentally, then you're the weakest person in the group. If you don't allow things to control you and you control it, then you're the strongest person in the group. And so just those little words of wisdom, just like you give me, those little words of wisdom that I kind of live by, that Superman mentality, that I'm unstoppable physically, mentally, and emotionally. If I have that mentality, there's nothing going to hold me back. And so that's what I really push to the kids. In a lot of situations, so.
So now you also do real estate, and how do you use that mentorship with your clients? Because today, I mean, everybody has a degree in Google and everybody knows everything, right?
Yeah. So it's not a I know and you don't know. It's a I teach and we learn together. I rely very, very heavily on my educational background that I'm not coming in at, I'm not hounding and searching for that next deal. I'm hounding and searching for that next relationship that I can teach somebody and empower them to know exactly what they're doing with tons and tons of money. And so with my education background, and then with your mentorship on the real estate side, I have really been able to hone in what I kind of call my white glove service, to where I, just like you did with me and Valerie, I know exactly what this family needs, and it's not going to be what they need or they need. It's what this family needs, and I walk them through it as a teacher, as an educator, and we go through it together, as opposed to me standing up on the mountain and say, "All right, come on, get your finances in order, let's close this deal." It's me walking with them, knowing what's over the mountain.
Yeah, because it's emotional, right? It's emotional, financial. This is the biggest purchase somebody will ever do. And real fast before we get ready to end up the show, tell us how to get a hold of you again.
Right, so you can get a hold of me at 979-200-0100. Easiest number on the planet. All you gotta do is call me. And then you can also go to hartmanlivingtexas.com. All my information's there. Please go check it out. There's more and more stuff getting on that website every single day, from not just buyer's guides, seller's guides, but if you're a veteran, how to buy like that, first-time buyers. There's a ton of information, so go check it out and, give me a call.
Well, and the one thing that I've always found very appealing about you, I remember when you first talked to me about being a realtor. I mean, we talked a lot about it, then you made the decision to get into it, and then you did your thing for about a year, we met back up later on, and what I like about you is what you said earlier, it's okay not to know something. Things change on the daily, right? So ask for help, ask for opinions, and you're really good about, doing that, not only with me, but actually with your clients, with your students. And I think that's pretty amazing. So one more time, Garrett, what would you tell somebody out there that's kind of running through life? I'm gonna keep it quick because we're pretty much close to the end. What would you tell somebody?
It sounds cliche, but what's going on, whatever's struggle, your struggles are, it will not last forever if you do not let life pass you by. You've got to grab a hold of something. You got to own something small in order to grow to the next level. I've lived it. I've been there. I was in the dumps, and it just took opening up, being vulnerable, and asking questions, and talking to somebody who I gained trust in. It took a while to find you. But it took voicing my inner struggles to somebody.
Well, Gary, it's been fun talking again. I know you very well. Guys, thanks for joining us at Battle Ready. We'll talk to you soon.